You are listening to the sassiest podcast in the world. Born in the Nordics, democratizing B2B SaaS knowledge everywhere.
Hi, I'm Daniel.
And I'm Thomas, and we are experienced SaaS professionals that are curious about how other successful SaaS companies go to market, scale, build winning teams, and great products.
Join us on our journey as we speak to SaaS leaders trying to get hold of their secret sauce.
And today's guest is Janus Klok Mathisen, the co-founder and CTO at Pixels.
In the near future, we'll start to see agents that will be able to maybe test your code, then find a bug, then maybe come up with a solution for that bug, maybe test that solution and come back and say, hey, now I found this bug, I tested it, the solution, everything works, by the way, this is the best performing, and so on. I think we will definitely see agents that will help us in the future like that.
Right, we are back. We are in full preparation of the upcoming SaaSiest 2024 event.
How do you feel, Thomas? How do you feel about that?
I feel excited.
Yeah?
Really. I'm not nervous yet, so I'm just waiting for that to kick in. I don't remember how it was last year. Were we nervous?
I don't think we had a chance to feel nervousness, especially not you, because the last night before, like, we had some check-in things that we needed to solve, some with the machines and the site. So I think you slept like 1 hour.
Yeah.
You could not feel anything but excitement and tiredness.
No, but I think if you have done this a few times, basically you know what's ahead. You know the milestones, you know what's to be in place. And working with a great team, you can feel, you know, security. And then, of course, you're going to have some butterflies in the stomach when it's showtime. But I think that's a part of it as well that is sort of enjoyable. But before that, we would like to continue bring you content, because it's about democratizing knowledge. That's what we're all about. So we're going to talk about AI, maybe from a little bit of another angle than we used to. We have a fantastic CEO with us that has been a great contributor to the community. Daniel, any last words?
I'm excited. Let's see what we will find out. It's very existential today, I feel.
Here we go. Today, we are super excited to welcome a person that has meant a lot for the SaaSiest community, been very engaged and helpful. It's no other than Janus Klok Mathisen, the co-founder and CTO at Pixels. Warm welcome.
Thank you very much, Thomas and Daniel. I'm happy to be here.
Wow, what a welcome you got there from Thomas.
Yeah.
Like, he welcomes everybody really, really well, but this one felt a little bit special. Like, you know, big words, you've meant a lot to us. And I can honestly just echo that. Like, you know, you've been an ambassador from the get-go, which we very much appreciated. And then we realized here, just not too long ago, it's like, Janus has never been on the podcast. What's going on here? So I'm happy we're finally here, and we're going to discuss some really interesting topics today.
And I have been a huge fan from the beginning. I in general, I love the whole startup community and yeah, all that's going on. And at least in my early days, a lot of that was happening in America. And I think you guys really managed to pull us together here in the Nordics as well. So I love the work that you guys are doing. So thank you for that.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you so much for those kind words. I think every podcast episode should start like this from now.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about something very interesting here in a moment about AI, how that's reshaping the talent and our workforce. But before we get there, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Janus? Like, how did you end up where you are right now?
Sure. Yeah. So, well, I guess it's, for me, it all started in the early, yeah, the late 90s, I guess, in 99. I joined a startup back then that's called MCB, together with, that was founded by one of my good friends, whose name is Thomas. And basically, we were building an e-commerce platform for all kinds of shops, mostly in Denmark, a bit in the Nordics. And during that time, we learned that one of the big issues that people had was with the quality of their images. So at some point around 2011, Thomas left that company, and me and Thijs, who co-founded Pixels, we all joined in on this project. And I think in the early days, the whole Pixels, the idea behind Pixels basically came from us having this e-commerce company and seeing that problem. And I think we kind of thought it was, you know, a small side project we will do while we figure out what the next big startup should be. And then I guess fate would have it that we came in at a time where this was really something that got a lot of attention and focus. And one of the very early things that happened for us where I guess we started taking it more seriously was that we got contacted by this very big online American bookshop that later turned into a marketplace. And they basically were looking for someone who had a tech solution for retouching images. And well, then basically that was in the very early days of Pixels. And also probably when we looked at each other and said, oh, maybe it's not a side project. Maybe this is something we need to give a really serious a serious go at.
All right. So it sounds like you have been an entrepreneur working in tech for a long time. So when you're not at your computer, when you're AFK, as they say, what do you do then?
Yeah, I'm first of all, I'm probably one of those a little bit boring guys that will say, you know, I spend a lot of time with my family, but I actually love doing that. So I try to do that as much as possible. And then the last few years, I guess as I'm getting older and sitting in front of a desk all the time and not moving around too much, I start to feel that in my body.
Who doesn't?
So, I realized I had to do something. So in the last few years, I started doing quite a lot of yoga.
Okay.
So now I have 2 weekly yoga classes and
wow,
more or less do yoga. Try to do yoga every day. I managed it this morning. So yeah, I love that.
How is your downward dog?
I think actually it's getting really good. I can almost do it with flat the heels to the floor now.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty happy about that one.
Wow.
I just have to admit something here, Thomas. You can ignore my message. Like when you said AFK, I was like, I have no idea what they're talking about. But I Googled it. Now I know what it means.
Yeah, and I quite recently came home from Thailand. My wife and her sister and her husband, they went to yoga almost every day. And, you know, I feel I have a bad knee. I'm kind of stiff. I don't really dare to get started. Maybe I should, but I'm not really there yet.
I was very stiff to begin with as well. And it's improving. And I can just feel it does fantastic things to my body.
All right. But going back to Pixels, you mentioned a little bit about what you're doing. But if we're going to be very specific, what do you bring to the world?
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess at its core, it's a pretty basic service. It's image retouching for product images. So a very common use case is companies shooting product images, and then we will help them, you know, remove that crease that is on the shirt, or remove a bit of glue that's on that demo shoe and stuff like that.
Okay.
So it, in many ways, it's very basic. And I think when we started as well, I guess often how it is when you do any startup, right? You think it's very basic, and then the deeper you dive into it, you realize how complex it is.
Yeah.
I think for us, what in our marketplace, where it really becomes complex is when you scale it up.
Okay.
Because I think anyone can shoot a few images of a product. Not everyone can do it great, but if you have the knowledge of how to do it, you know, and have a studio, everyone can shoot it. But once you have to do that with thousands of products every day, and you really, there's a lot of stress as well to get right, things online, because now it's in stock, right? And you're just waiting for the images and the text for it to go online and so on. I think that's really where it becomes complex, and where we help brands and e-tailers around the globe. We help them do this at scale.
Mm.
One of the huge challenges there is within our business is that it's very, very hard for all these studios to actually plan in detail. So if you knew that in 5 days you're going to shoot 2,000 products,
yeah,
then you can, of course, plan for that. Very often they don't. And for a lot of these companies, it is something that changes from day to day. So one day you will have 100 images and the next you will have 5,000.
Yeah.
And you basically want to get them all online as fast as possible. So that's what we help them do.
Okay. So is there any particular size of companies that you work with? What's the typical? I guess if I have 5 products, I won't go to you, right?
Probably not with 5 products. We're probably not the right provider for you. We do treat ourselves as a SaaS company. So first of all, we are aiming at going for clients who have this continuous need. If you just have a need for 5 product and then you're out again, we that's not what we're going for.
Yeah.
We also we built what we call templates for all your specification needs. Some of our clients will call it style guides.
Yeah.
We also set up all kinds of different workflows together with clients.
Yeah. But is there a sweet spot when it comes to the size of the company, number of products, if you would choose?
I know we are aiming for companies that have more than 20,000 images that needs to be retouched a year.
Okay.
But we do have a lot of clients who are a lot smaller for that. So that's what our marketing team and so on aim at. But we have I would say some of the smaller clients we have probably have 100 images a month.
Okay.
And some have, yeah, hundreds of thousands.
All right.
And tell us a little bit, you know, number wise, where are you guys right now? What's your ARR? How fast are you growing? Let's start there.
Yeah. So we are around $16 million in yearly revenue. I would love to tell you that we grew a lot the last year, but to be honest, the last year has been a bit tough. I think on everyone, most of our clients are in the fashion industry and fashion e-com has been hit quite hard. So we haven't seen the growth we would like in the last year, but in general, we've been growing the last many years, like somewhere between 20 and 30% a year. And we are also aiming at getting back to that level.
Yeah. And how many customers do you have today and in which geos are they predominantly located?
Yeah, so we have on a monthly basis, we have somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 active clients. I think I did a look up in our database recently, and I think in total we work with now more than 50,000 clients in our lifetime. So, of course, a lot of those are tiny,
right.
But on an ongoing basis, we work with 1,500 to 2,000 clients,
yeah,
and they are quite distributed. So we have more or less clients from all countries in the world, but definitely the major part of our revenue comes from two buckets, and that's Europe and America.
Yeah.
America is a bit bigger than Europe, and then I think Europe is around 40%, America around 50%, and then the remaining is the rest of the world, something like that.
You'd think, or now I'm assuming here, but you'd think with the recent development in online shopping in some of the Asian countries, that would also be a very interesting market for you guys. Is there a reason why you haven't decided to look east?
I think it might be at some point. Definitely, when people choose us, it often starts out as being a cost exercise, right? It's expensive to have people sitting here in Denmark where I am and doing this kind of work, and I think that push hasn't really happened yet in Asia, but I do then think what we're seeing is a lot of our clients and a lot of the ones who have a bit more experience, it goes a bit away of being a cost exercise and more about quality, scale, all of those other problems. And definitely those problems companies are seeing in Asia as well. So I could imagine that that could be an interesting market for us in the future.
Yeah.
And then I also just have to say it's also about choosing your markets, right? I know our sales and marketing team, they are screaming for, they want to hire more people in more markets. So, you know, it's also a limitation in that sense, I think.
Yeah. And I know that you have a particular structure when it comes to your employees. You have a lot of them abroad. So how many do you have in your workforce?
Yeah. So in total, we are around 500 people in Pixel. So quite a lot.
Yeah.
The majority of those are in Vietnam. I'm the CTO, so I have I'm in my team. I have all the developers. They are also in Vietnam. We early on we decided to build that team in Vietnam.
And how big is that team?
I have a team of just under 40 people.
Okay.
So yeah, and I think in Vietnam we have just below 400 people in total.
All right.
So that is the majority. And the majority of those are graphic designers who are working on doing the retouching.
Okay.
Or part of the retouching, I should probably say. And then the rest is also quite spread out globally. We have now our headquarters is in Copenhagen. So I think that's our biggest office outside of Vietnam. And I think there are around 10 people in that office. So the rest of the offices are quite small, with maybe 5-7 people in each.
Yeah.
But Berlin, Barcelona, San Diego, we have offices in many places.
Yeah. And lastly, before we go into the main topic here, you've been around for quite some time with Pixels, but are you bootstrapped or have you taken in VC money during the journey, or what does that look like?
Yeah, in 2017, we were bootstrapped mostly. We did have a bit of, you know, some of the government funds and so on help out.
Yeah.
But in 2017, we closed the round with, I guess, what we would call angel investors, but of $7 million. So a decent round for that, I guess. And then what is that now? A year and a half ago, the company, we basically sold the company, you could say,
yeah,
to Adelis, private equity company. But I remain an owner, and the whole management team owns parts of the company, and even quite a few people in our management team in Vietnam as well. So I think Adelis probably owns around 85% of the company, something like that. So, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, congratulations so far on an exciting journey. And just like you say, everybody had a little bit of a tough year the last, you know, actually couple of years here. And we're crossing our fingers. And it looks like more people are going to have, you know, there's an upward trajectory again here. And we hope that for you guys as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, what's an upward trajectory is AI and how fast it's coming in to the workforce and what it's doing to our fantastic workforce. We've debated this a lot in our different forums, and also obviously pertaining to the field that's very close to you, engineering and product. And I want to come with I don't know if it's a big statement or question. I'm going to phrase it as a question. You tell us.
Mm-hmm.
Is AI going to replace engineering teams in the near future?
Yeah, I love that you asked that question, because I am getting asked that question quite a lot. This is something I hear from my own team. I have team members who have asked me more or less exactly that question. It's also something I'm debating with or my tech friends who may work as engineers as well. And of course, it's also triggered by a lot of things that are happening and a lot of news that's coming out, right? So I think just a few weeks ago, NVIDIA's CEO said something like, in 5 years, no, there'll be no developers or no need for developers.
Yep, I saw that.
Yeah. And I think he even said to the young people, don't look at this as a direction for your education and stuff like that.
Wow.
I I don't particularly agree, I have to say. I see it a bit differently. But I do definitely see huge changes in the for developers, definitely in the near future, and probably for most of us and most people working in the maybe a little longer future, because there's no doubt that AI right now is really moving fast, and it's also kind of wrong to say a lot of the stuff that's starting to pan out now was stuff that people started doing research on in the 70s or something like that. So I guess it's kind of been slow, right? But now we're getting the computing power where we can actually move a lot of this forward. And there's no doubt that that this will at least change the task that you have at hand. But I think... when I talk to my own team, I'm right now. We have a meetup in April, a developer summit where we will be discussing everything about development for the next year or so. And I'm preparing a presentation that has a working title of something like "What is your job really?" Because that's kind of the question I go back to these guys with. Because I think, of course, if you see your job as a developer as, you know, typing in your keyboard and doing the code and doing it fast and maybe doing the perfect algorithm in typing in that keyboard, maybe very well that job could go away. And maybe very well that could be done a lot faster and a lot better by an AI in the very near future. And I think we are seeing, already we're seeing tools that developers and engineers should be using to do a lot of their work, but we're also seeing those tools improving a lot, and so that part of our work might very well go away quite soon.
So if you have an aspiring developer, someone let's say 20, 21 years old, they want to be a developer, do you have any advice? Where should you put your time in order to be, you know, attractive in the job market?
Yeah, I think if you are looking down the path of and thinking about becoming a developer, an engineer, it's usually because you have some sort of a technical mindset, right? Yeah. You are probably the one who, you know, you can always pick up the remote and figure out how to set up that TV and so on. And I think that skill, I think in many ways, that question that I'm asking, what is really our job, right, is somehow to translate for all our customers, for our colleagues and so on, translate those problems that they have into something that can be solved with software or technically, right?
Yeah.
So I would say I think there's some amazing skills that are coming back to be important for developers, soft skills,
yeah,
like communication, empathy, and critical thinking. I think those are some of those skills have in periods they have been not valued as much as I think they will be in the future.
Okay, so it's more like we have been limited with what in the way we have developed software. You know, we have been very bound by what language and frameworks and by, you know, how fast we can type and all of that. And all of that's going to change. And maybe also people that thought they wouldn't be able to be a developer because some of these things scare them would now become a part and a creative asset for product development.
I think very much so, yeah. And I definitely think being a developer has always been a creative skill.
Yeah.
Some people might think of it as something, some people think it's almost the opposite of creative, but it is actually extremely creative to figure out how to even when you're writing the code, right?
Yeah.
I also noticed that I know so many developers who are playing musical instruments and stuff like that. There's definitely a huge creative energy in being a developer.
Mm.
And I think those skills definitely focus on those and put a lot of effort into those. I think that's a really good direction to go in.
So is that something that you have thought about now when it comes to new hires and how you sort of put your teams together and so on?
I don't know if I like specifically thought about it like for a new hire, but it's probably something I've been kind of thinking about for the last few years, at least, because I think it was probably like this before as well. But we also needed, you know, that guy who could write that super optimized code to run super fast somewhere, right?
Yeah.
So I think it might be, you see it more now, but it's definitely, it's been. So as I said, we created our development team in Vietnam, and then that's many, many years ago we started that. We did it very differently than most of the foreign companies who come to Vietnam and create development teams, because most of those companies will run basically an outsourcing operation. And a lot of them will basically send very, very clear specifications to people, to the engineering team, and say, hey, basically type this out. And we, from the very beginning, I remember the very first guy we hired, Thomas, who I started Pixels together with. He had a job interview with him, and he started asking all kinds of questions, and Thomas basically looked at him and said, hey, you decide, you're the boss. You're the guy we trust to do this, and that's the whole way we built the whole team has been with that mindset, that we want people to think by themselves. We want them to own. We also been especially in the beginning, really been emphasizing that, hey, you're not building a project, you're building a product, so you're gonna support it for the next 10 years or 15 years, right? It's you're gonna own it. It's yours, and I think that has allowed us to really attract people who would like that kind of way of working and who would who's has that mindset. So I think in many ways we already have that, but of course at the same time we also get into day to day, right? And we get tasks. I have spreadsheets I need to update every Monday before 12 o'clock and blah blah blah. We all get into that, right? And all of a sudden, I have to question that. Do I actually have to update that spreadsheet? And maybe I have to question, why am I? What is actually the goal? Because I'm doing that for a reason, right? I'm there's someone who needs that data to do something. Well, maybe in the new sense, maybe they could get that in a new way, and maybe I think the real core message is we need to understand more about the holistic approach, I would say. What is the whole problem we're trying to solve and not just the tiny part of me updating a spreadsheet?
Mm.
And I think that is definitely a learning, both for me, but also for my team and for a lot of people, I think.
I have an avalanche of questions for you now. Like it got stuck in my mind here about the creative side you were talking about. So maybe pushing things a little bit here on my end.
Can a sales guy develop a product? That's what we're hearing.
That's where I was going with this. Because one of the, in my opinion at least, one of the main differentiators between good development teams or good engineering teams versus not as good development teams is that they understand the customer,
mm-hmm.
and they understand the customer problems, and they understand the best way to solve those potential problems.
Yeah.
And if you just look at that and isolate that, that could potentially be a marketeer.
Yeah.
A marketeer knows the market really well.
Mm-hmm.
They understand the customer, the problems, probably understand in theory how they could handle or how a solution could look like. Does this mean that a marketeer could potentially be the new era of engineers?
I think definitely. I often think about it as this kind of, you know, that crack between the stove and the kitchen table where all that dirty stuff goes into.
Yeah.
That crack definitely also exists between, for instance, my team and our sales team or our marketing team. And I think some of these tools that are coming out now can definitely help us maybe remove that crack or at least bridge it better.
Yeah.
But I think exactly what you're saying, in Pixels, I work very, very closely with our product team, and I love that team because they are, of course, a lot less technical than we are, but they really, you know, they really get this. You need to understand, need to focus on the problem.
Right.
And they keep focusing on the problem for a long time before they start going into solution mode. Part of that is also what I'm teaching my developers now and telling them, hey, we need to do more of this. But I actually think in many ways, if you as a sales guy could describe your product, your problem in all those right ways with all those nuances that you need to think about, you probably could develop stuff yourself in the future. I think the challenge is probably that those nuances also include all kinds of technical questions. So you might say, oh, it would be super nice as a sales guy, I want to see all of this data and it should just be available super fast. And then someone might come in and say, oh, but what about security? Have you thought about that? What if the way you say you want it super easy, but that also allows someone else to go in and see that data? And, you know, so I think, of course, again, the AIs are also going to develop and become better at that. I know right now we're looking into AIs that actually can help us detect security problems in our code without, you know, testing the application, just looking at the code.
Right.
And it's hopefully that will be amazing.
Yeah.
But there is so many nuances to understanding a problem. And I think that's where I'm impressed with our product team of how they ask, you know, they wouldn't just talk to you. They would talk to you, but then they would also talk to your clients.
And right.
They would probably also talk to other people who need to work with you. And I think that holistic understanding is important. But again, you're probably going to solve a lot of day-to-day problems just by telling AI to, hey, can you help me update this spreadsheet every Monday before 12? I'm pretty sure that's gonna come.
Yeah. Which of course makes a lot of sense. And thank you so much for that nuanced answer. And I think I will speak for myself here. I don't know if you agree with me. It's probably, for the time being, short term at least, probably best that sales and marketeers stick to sales and marketing, and let's see what the future holds.
I think you guys have some things that the development team does not have.
And vice versa, and obviously.
Vice versa, yeah.
And speaking about the development team, I wanted to ask you, like, you know, you touched upon it a little bit, and you had, in lack of better terms, some folks that were nervous about, you know, their job and their role with the influx of AI. So how have you introduced AI to your teams from a, call it, efficiency perspective or a complement to the existing team?
Yeah. So, first of all, it's still early days, right? So, I would say there's a lot that we need to do in the future. We have tools now that we're using every day in the tools they use to develop. You can integrate different AIs that will help you write code and so on. As I mentioned, now we're looking at some of these tools that can basically scan our code and flag. I think the early versions that's already been there for a while can flag something that could look like a security problem. The new ones will fix it and tell you, hey, here's the solution. And then, of course, you still probably want people to take a look at that and validate that it is actually a solution that you can use.
Yeah.
And then I think I know for myself, for instance, and I think that goes for you too as well. ChatGPT has proven to be a great assistant, right? For doing where you can write those I don't know, two sentences and then get most of what you need of 20 sentences out that is pretty useful.
Yeah.
I use that sometimes for when we make descriptions of features, and I feel like, we need to, can you give an example of this JSON? And I'll describe it and it will put it out for me, sometimes with small mistakes, but it's very fast for me to correct that rather than write it all out myself.
Yeah,
so I think tools like that is definitely popping into our everyday life.
Hey there, are you back on the growth trajectory again? Congratulations. Then you should connect with Noble Recruitment to hire the best GTM talent for your business. Whether you're looking for a strategic leadership hire, building a whole sales team, or opening a new market, their world-class recruitment teams in Sweden, Denmark, Benelux, UK, and Germany are there to assist. Head on over to noblerecruitment.com and accelerate your recruitment activities starting today.
Looking more on the technical side, is there any tools that you are using now that you have found useful and that you think others also should look into?
I think we use Visual Studio for our .NET development, and it has now an AI code generator built in. We found that very useful.
Yeah.
We also we've done tests with others. Some of them we are struggling a bit to figure out. You know, there's also a lot of security around, for instance, our source code. We don't want that to be everywhere, at least not all parts of our source code. So some of them we are still trying to figure out exactly how can we use them without sharing too much of our data.
Okay, so you're afraid that the AI sort of also consumes your code in a way that it might be used somewhere else.
we know some of them do, right?
Yeah.
We know that, for instance, ChatGPT, if you're not paying, and they will use your data for training, right?
Yeah.
So of course, you need to think about those things and think about what would happen if this comes out as part of answers to other people, right?
Mm.
That is definitely a concern as well.
Yeah.
Was it not, and this is again the sales guy speaking here, did GitHub Copilot not go out with the promise that they will not steal your data, they will not even borrow it, they will not use it to train anyway?
Yeah.
They did, right?
I think that's one of the promises you get now from Copilot, GitHub Copilot, and definitely also a tool that we're seeing a lot of promises in. And of course, at a certain point, it also comes down to the companies behind it, right?
Yeah.
And you need to trust them. But it's already like that, right? Even with the operation system we're running, and we take backups in the cloud and stuff like that. So
yeah.
So it's already like that.
Yeah.
So on that, I'm curious then, like, so if you're using ChatGPT or any other like AI engine like this, have you started adding them to your list of subcontractors? Are they in there? Because I'm thinking, like, you know, if a buyer sees like ChatGPT, I'm like, no, I'm allergic to this. I'm not going to do business with these guys. Or maybe they don't. I don't know.
Yeah, we have for the tools that we are using. For a lot of other tools, I guess it also depends a lot if we are with these tools, if we are sharing customer data or it's only our own data, like the source code we of course own.
Yeah.
We are right now looking at it could be ChatGPT, could be some other large language model, but using it basically to generate product descriptions based on, you could say based on images, but it's based on tags we extract from images. But in that case, we would definitely be it would be something we would have the clients activate, and when they did, we would definitely inform them who would be using this data and getting access to this data. So
yeah.
So definitely that would be part of that.
So what about testing of code?
Yeah, I think as I mentioned, these tools we're testing out now, who are looking for basically security problems, that is an example of that. We have tried in different ways to get some of the, you know, in development, some of the tasks that people are not always that fond of doing is, for instance, unit testing, writing unit tests for your code, which is great if you do it, and great. I think a lot of developers luckily found a great way of doing it, often starting out with that, like starting out with what is it really I want to test and then writing the code. That's probably the way to do it. But sometimes that's not what happens. And I know some of our developers have been testing out using some of these AIs to help them write unit tests. We need to be careful with these, all these AIs as well, because they do have those hallucination problems and so on. So you really still need to understand what you're putting into your source code and validate it and usually also change it a bit. But it is definitely interesting. And I think that part of what we will see in the future, also now there's all this talk about agents, which is basically, usually it's multiple AIs that can be triggered and maybe be triggered by each other, maybe use each other's output as inputs and so on. So they can go out and execute more complex tasks that will take multiple steps. I definitely think in the near future, we'll start to see agents that will be able to maybe test your code, then find a bug, then maybe come up with a solution for that bug, maybe test that solution and come back and say, hey, now I found this bug, I tested it, the solution, everything works, by the way, this is the best performing, and so on. I think we will definitely see agents that will help us in the future like that.
Yeah, I deployed it. I wrote the sort of, I don't know, the notes as well for the deploy and everything. So one more question here, maybe last, is that how do you think this development will change the role for the CTO?
Yeah, good question. I guess...
Will you be a philosopher?
Yeah, I was just about to say, I guess those soft skills... I think they will also be more important because, of course, if you are managing people and leading people where you expect them to become better at soft skills than before, then you also need to have that mindset, right? So most likely it will change. I don't know exactly what the change will be, but I definitely think the same things. What I really like is actually a lot of those things that I think will have higher value in the future is actually those human sides, right? It is empathy. It is being good at communication. It is, understanding each other, seeing it from your side and stuff like that. And I actually think that's pretty good for all of humanity. And I think the same will go for the CTO in the future. We need to be even more human.
I mean, there's definitely a change happening, and sometimes I almost feel like, you know, we just blindly accept the change because the AI wind is so strong and it's the right thing to do. You need to jump on the bandwagon. But sometimes I feel, in certain scenarios at least, in most of the scenarios, it's you know, there's some places where it's 100% true, you can't deny it and so on. But is the change making you more efficient? Is the output greater? I guess where I'm trying to get with this, like, now you've started to introduce AI, you're playing around with it with your teams, but have you seen like that there is an uptick, that you are better? Is the outcome better? Like, and how do you measure better? Does that mean that you spit out more code?
Yeah.
Or does that mean that your customers pay more for your software and they're happier?
Yeah, good question. It's actually something we discussed recently in the CTO group that you guys host as well. How do we measure this efficiency? And because this first guy that we hired in Vietnam, his name is Kang. I remember he also, one of the changes he did to the team down there, some of them had the mindset, the more code you could write, how much code, hey, I wrote this many lines of code today, then I'm good, right?
Right.
And he really emphasized for everyone that he loved when they deleted code. That was really, he was like cheering them whenever they came back and said, hey, I just deleted 100 lines of code. He was like, yeah, that's the real efficiency gain, right? That's where you really optimize it because you remove complexity and so on.
Right.
And I think you're very right. I think we all seen on LinkedIn, right? All those profiles that all of a sudden start writing long comments to all of the posts, and they are all, you know, they have that feeling to them, and probably written by an AI, all of them, right? And then in a moment, all of us are going to have AIs that will strip that down to those few words that actually make sense, and then we'll be doing that. And of course, that doesn't provide value, right?
Right.
So I think you're very right that using these tools, it's also going to be super important that we all understand that using these tools should not be just to generate more at all cost, right? It should be to generate more quality. How to measure it? To be honest, it's very, very hard. I think it's more... I've been asked many, many times in my years as CTO if we could come up with KPIs to measure the development team, the engineering team. And of course you can. Usually we end up, and our KPIs now is also on, you know, the up times and, you know, how quick are we to fix a bug and stuff like that. It's very hard to measure who writes the good code and who doesn't. On the other hand, I would say me and the engineering leads I had have never been in doubt. You know who the great coders are and the great engineers are, and you know who needs to develop more, right? So
right.
So I think that's what we're looking for. Who is using these tools in the right and the good way, right?
Yeah. So I think this has been a really interesting conversation, and I think we could spend many, many hours on this. and as the development goes fast as well, there will be new nuances all the time. But
definitely.
I mean, based on what we have discussed now, what would you say a company that tries to manage what is happening here and how they should develop their development organization or how you work as a leader? Three tips on the way, based on your thoughts at the moment, that you would like to give another CTO that are thinking about these things?
Yeah, I think the first would be, I think most CTOs now have started jumping into this area. And if not, I would definitely say do it and start testing, right? And be open to testing out these solutions. So I think that would be my first advice if you haven't already done that. And then I think it would be this focus on soft skills,
yeah.
Focus on maybe getting your developers closer to, that could be the sales or the marketing team or the customer, right? And focus on, and that can be hard because, you know, we also have in development, we have a lot of personalities, I would say, and maybe you need to help with that, but focus on those soft skills. And then I would also say, I really think we also, and I hope that also comes true here, we need to lower the scare factor.
Yeah.
And we need to start talking about this, not always talking about this as, you know, you're not going to have a job. And that seems like, and of course it catches a lot of links on likes on social media and so on, right? But it also becomes a little bit tiresome if everyone has to be on the edge all the time and thinking, oh, what's happening?
Right.
Let's talk more about it as another tool that we're going to start to learn how to use and accept that some things will work, some won't. And yeah, that it's, I don't think it has to be as scary as it sometimes sounds.
I agree. I think it makes a lot of sense. And like, it's just another tool. It's a big tool. It's a big leap.
Definitely.
But it's another tool that we have to learn to coexist with and to leverage. And I think nobody in 15 years will question like this AI thing. It's like nobody's questioning internet today.
Yeah,
like,
true.
It is there. We can't live without it. And it will be same thing with this wave of AI tools that are all coming at us right now. We just need to understand like how we make the most of it.
Yeah, definitely.
It's very insightful. Thank you. Thank you so much. You've certainly inspired me to do certain things here. After this call, I'm going to go to ChatGPT and see if I can get some brief description for some kind of text that I needed here.
Fantastic.
Now, looking at your future, Pixel's futures, like, what do you foresee? If we speak here in another 12 months or 18 months, what else will you tell us?
Yeah. I just worked with my R&D team. We have a team of AI scientists who started that team 5-6 years ago. That's been very much an internal team, you could say, focusing mm-hmm. internally on automating and making tools for the retouching process. In the last 2 months or so, me and the head of this team and the head of our product, we've been discussing a lot about the next couple of years for this team. And I think we are definitely going to try to put some of that AI in the hands of our clients.
Okay.
So trying to turn some of that stuff into client-focusing tools and figuring out what the real use case is and where we can, you know, help our clients save time directly instead of course they do now through us. We control those tools, but you know, we think we can also put some of them in the hands of our clients. So that's definitely going to be a very big focus area for us. And then in a totally different direction, we recently started retouching videos as well.
Oh, wow.
And we're really seeing that videos is it's been something in our business. It's been something people have been talking about for a lot of years, but not really acting on. And it seems like people are starting to act now. So I also think we already developed the first version of our video retouching product, but that's definitely gonna be a focus area for us as well the next at least year, maybe a couple of years.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, we have a great community listening here. Do you have a shout out to make? Is there anything particular that you are looking for right now?
I would love to give, again, a shout out to you guys, but also to the community. I think it's 2 years ago, I joined the first executive group that you guys set up, a product group, and it was just amazing sitting there with 10, 15 other people who are facing a lot of the same challenges and getting to know them and talk to them. Now I'm in a CTO group and it's exactly the same feeling. So I would definitely, big shout out to all of those guys. And I would say to everyone else, like, join some of those groups because it is really, really, there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah.
And then of course, I'm not coming to SASIES this year, as you know, because I will be in Vietnam.
Okay, we can
close it down now.
Yeah, we can skip this episode.
But I want to give you a shout out. I did join last one, and it is amazing. It's an amazing conference as well, and again the network and all of that. I think it's just fantastic. So.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for all the work.
We're going to miss you for sure, Janus, and hope that you can join us next year. Lastly, is there a topic or a person that you think we should feature on the show?
And you can say anything here, like with that start you had and with this finish. Like,
yeah.
You know, I actually think at some point, you know, you guys should come here to Holstebro. It's pretty much as far away from Copenhagen as you can get. It's not that far from Billund, which has an airport, so maybe mm-hmm. you could do that.
Okay.
But I think you should come here because I just borrowed this mic from the CMO of Contract Book,
yeah.
who's here in this office. We have my co-founders of Pixels. We created another company that they bought out of Pixels. They are here. We have the founders of Sleek Notes are here. We have actually, I would say, a little bit of a startup hub here in Holstebro as well. So I think at some point you should come here. And
yeah, so you got to pick the location, Janus, but who are we going to interview or what are we going
to
talk about?
You know, I have to admit, I'm I think you should talk to all those people.
Okay, so we're going to gather a crowd and we're going to, you know, just go crazy.
But if you're bringing someone, I have to say I'm a bit of a fanboy of this amazing woman called Cassie Kosikov, I think her name is.
Okay.
She used to be the, what was the title? The chief decision scientist at Google.
Yeah, I've heard of her. I've tried to reach her, actually.
Thomas, why is she not a podcast guest yet?
Yeah. She should be. She's amazing, and she really, she made some of the classes she did at Google about AI. She made those, Google made those available publicly, and I think it's really at least part of those classes you anyone can see and start to understand the idea. She's such a good speaker, and in general, she also talks a lot, I think, in a positive frame, yeah. and not with all that drama about the AI revolution that's happening right now. So I really, yeah, she's fantastic.
Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
All right. We're going to have to chase her down now. So
please do.
Once again, Janos, this was great. Thank you so much for joining the show. And again, despite you not being able to make it to Sassiest, we look forward to continue this exciting conversation in the upcoming network session. So thank you again. See you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Daniel, what's your main takeaway from the episode today?
I'm probably going to have a boring one, but I think it's an important one. AI, for me, people are going to hate me for this one. As fantastic and as amazing as it is it not just yet another, if we look at our world, another business transformation? We've done business transformations before, you know, when we went from, you know, non-digital to digital and so on. I think we just have to treat it as it's just yet another transformation we have to do as businesses, as organizations, as, you know, working teams, as individuals. And if we run with that mindset, we know how to transform. There is a template as to how you transform an organization. And of course, that needs to be updated and adjusted to fit the AI era. But I think it's just another great tool that's going to empower us and make us better. It's not going to replace us. We just have to like tag along with it and find a way to coexist. So yeah, I think that's really what I take away from this. And I don't take it as developers will not disappear. Developers will be more important than ever. They'll just have a slightly different role. And maybe that means that the educations to become a developer will be slightly different compared to what it is today. But there will still be engineers.
For sure.
For sure.
Maybe they won't be called engineers anymore. I don't know. But what I think is interesting is sort of how the role might change and what qualities or what you know, things that will be valued. I mean, we talked about the creative part, empathic part, how it will change you as a leader. So I think that will be very interesting going forward. And a little bit what we talked about, you know, having sales and marketing and so on involved, it could be a great tool also for involving the whole company in the product development, or even, you know, involving the customer in a better way. Just now you have, you know, your feature request on some kind of Zendesk community or whatever you work with, and it's really hard to collect and make something useful for all the inputs, or what right. The CSMs here in their QBRs and so on, to put some acronyms out there. Yeah, I think it can transform how you work with the product and, you know, focus more on the value and not so much about typing the right commandos and, you know, find the bug and all the other things that you need to do as well.
Yeah, maybe it's even a blessing. Now that you mentioned this, I'm listening to you, and I think maybe it's even a blessing. Maybe the current setup allows some engineers to be engineers that, you know, produce great code and so on. But it's a very focused exercise on me, myself, and my code a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, AI is maybe going to, in a good way, force those people to lift their head a little bit and force them to interact and further understand the customers.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to benefit everybody. But yeah.
Absolutely. And what's going to benefit everybody as well is if you manage to get the ticket to Sassiest 2024. And I mean, you need to hurry up because we are running out of tickets. Somewhere here we're going to stop, and then you need to take a look at 2025 or maybe visit us in Amsterdam 1st and 2nd of October. So we really hope that we can meet there. And besides that, well, we have a lot of other things coming up during the year, meetups in Benelux and other things. But let's focus now. We need to get the Malmö event going. So, Daniel, let's stop recording and get back to business.
Let's do it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We appreciate you guys.